At a little after 9:30 this Tuesday morning, and he's just blown in from the windy city.
John literally Brenner, flew in.
John, good to see you.
Indeed.
And congratulations on My Name is Jahan.
Yes.
Which is, of course, your book with the misspelling.
Did you just spot it? You did.
Spectacularly. Yeah. Well, I did after it was pointed out to me by a friend. But what I want to do is to begin this morning with you taking us back to third class in school. And go into the seat for me in a second. You're in the uniform and the teacher is talking away. What's happening in your head?
Nothing. I just went to school every... I never minded going to school. I never laid in the bed in the morning thinking, oh God, I have to get out of bed and go to school. No way, I hate this. Never, Mum never had to drag me out the front door. I always ran up the road. And that may be because I'm the youngest of five and there's 8 years between me and the next. So the only children I met was when I went to school. So I was delighted to go to school. But when I went in, it was blank. Yeah. And the regime of teaching just didn't suit the brain and it just didn't resonate with me at all. And I'd look at books and at that time you'd be asked to read a paragraph of a book and the teacher would call you and I'd be there dreading that they'd be asked to do it because I wouldn't get past the first word. And I just couldn't do it. The brain just wasn't wired for it. And the curriculum wasn't suited to me and I wasn't suited to the curriculum. And there was no alternative. That was the only... story in town, you had to do it and that was it, but it just didn't suit.
Did the window get a lot of attention from you?
No, the motorbike magazines.
The motorbike magazines were your go-to.
I went to school every day with a bag that was a foot thick and it was 11 inches of motorbike magazines and 1 inch of school books.
Yeah, okay.
But actually, it's the funny thing now, because when you'd read the motorbike magazine, that'd be the exact same today now with boat magazines. When I get a magazine and I'd read it, and I'd read it from cover to cover, but I will find something in a magazine from 10 years ago in 2 seconds. I'd have a photographic memory like that because you have an interest in it. The school books just didn't interest me at all. There was nothing in it that I was able to comprehend and it was just a waste of time.
Was it debilitating and belittling or did you have a coping mechanism to get you through that?
I never found it belittling. I found it difficult to sit in the class hoping that you weren't going to be asked the question. That was the difficult
was
one.
Was that a fear, like
a
dread?
Yeah, that would be a fear, absolutely, 100%. But thankfully, in every class I was in, there was a few others with me. I wasn't on my own. But that would be the fear. And there wasn't a frustration, and there should have been a frustration, because the others were getting on in class, and I was still in the lower 10% of the class, and I wasn't moving anywhere. So there should have been a frustration, which there wasn't. But I was never singled out from other pupils in the class to say that he's stupid or he's thicker. That never really happened. That never struck a chord with me at all. But you just went and you just sat there and you looked at the books and you just got nothing.
Nothing at all.
No.
Talk to me about your mother, because if you're a child struggling like that, your mother either is kind of embarrassed about it, or she's a doer. She was category B, obviously.
Yeah.
Talk to me about her, and because there's only so much a parent can do, and particularly at that time you're talking about, where there was total ignorance about it, and we're talking about dyslexia here, and
such a stupid name, isn't it?
Well,
it's a daft name.
I'm so glad you point this out, because it's so complicated. It's so hard to spell.
And an X.
Good luck with that. You think they call it something a lot more.
I must look it up and see where it came from because it makes no sense whatsoever.
I think it's possibly Greek or something, is it?
Well,
it's all Greek to us,
certainly,
right?
It was all Greek. The English was Greek as well.
But that's the problem. But again, your mother, talk to me about her and the importance.
Mum, I suppose, being the youngest of five, and as I say, there was 8 years between myself and Susan, I was at home and they were nearly all gone because by the time I was four, they were all in secondary school. So she struggled with me, definitely. And I know Finbar, who we'll talk to in a few minutes ago, who's the teacher who rescued me, she had his ear burnt every 2 weeks. I believe she was up and down the road worrying about me. What's wrong with him? What can we do? This, that and the other. And thankfully, at the age of 15, she threw in the towel and said, Grant, if you want to leave at the intercert, leave.
Yeah.
But it was tough, I'd say, on her because Jamie and Francis had gone to college. Susan and Catherine had left school and gone to college. And I was there and there was no hope I was even finishing school, never mind going to college.
Yeah.
So I suppose when she compares children and against the other four, she's saying, oh, my God, what will happen to him in the end? And I remember we had a priest who'd come and visit us regularly from Belfast. And he sat down, she obviously burnt his ear at some stage anyway, and he gave me a little test of some description. And I remember I was sent out then after the kitchen into the hall, and I was standing at the door listening, of course, ajar at the door to hear what she was going to say. And he says, don't worry about him, he'll be fine. So I think that gave her some comfort.
Okay.
But it was a long time coming because it was tough. And I know for you're a parent and I'm a parent, if it happens in our household, you would be worried.
No question.
You know, yeah, but you see, happiness isn't about, our success is happiness. It's nothing to do with money. And
were you a happy child?
Oh, yeah, always happy.
Yeah, you had your motorbike magazines.
Oh, yeah,
I
was in my own world. I was delirious.
Yeah.
Okay, just because I couldn't read that book there, it didn't bother me.
Results in
results? No. An E was a B at the back of the back of the
classroom. Convenient dyslexia. Yeah. A la carte.
I knew how to do a B from an E.
Yeah.
And then I went to the CUS in Leeson Street, which taught Latin, and I couldn't understand English, so that just didn't suit me at all.
I'm always intrigued by the teacher that changes everything.
Yes.
And I think I'm always interested in when I talk to a guest about that teacher, because it takes us off the beaten track of the humdrum of one's life and brings us into, and most people who I interview like to deflect anyway from their own story. And in this case, we're going to take that as a welcome deflection. And actually, the fates have been kind to us today because the teachers are at home.
Yes.
For reasons already mentioned. Talk to me about Mr. O'Driscoll.
Yeah, Finbar. Finbar came from West Cork and came to Dublin. I think it was his first job as a teacher after coming out of college, and he took a shining to me for some reason, we'll know in a minute maybe, and he took an interest in me. And it was funny because I was in West Cork during the summer and I met another colleague who was in school, which was well, Corey, and he said to me, we weren't talking about the book, we weren't talking about Finbar, we weren't talking about anything, we went to school together, I hadn't seen him for 30 years, and he said, you know something, he said, Finbar O'Driscoll cared. And that's the most important word, because he didn't teach the curriculum, he taught the child, and he saw issues with some of us in the class and he knew they needed help, and he went outside the boundaries of the 9 to 4 or whatever the case would be, 9 to 5, and looked after us. And only for that I wouldn't be able to read or write today.
That's a remarkably big thing to say. What do you think, I mean, before we speak to him, what did you see in him? Because you were only a boy then, so what did you see in this adult? Because adults are so big and teachers are so authoritative.
He was a small adult.
Oh, was he? Okay.
No. He was just out of college and he was young and he was into sport and he was into the things we were into, and we were able to bond with him unlike other teachers who were older and different generation. And he saw beyond the curriculum, I believe, and he was able to take his class and look after them as individuals as opposed to one big class. Mm-hmm. And he actually taught me for 3 years. He taught me for fourth class, I think, fifth and sixth. So he had a big influence on me overall. And he's the guy who said to Mum, listen, you better get him assessed because there's something going on there that's beyond what we can do in the classroom. And back then, it's funny actually, because when I was writing the book and when it was published, I'm thinking this won't make sense to anyone today, because the assistance and the help in classrooms today is much greater than what it would have been in the late 70s. But the amount of people who have written to me and have phoned me and called me and said, listen, I can't believe that's my son, that's my daughter.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And they're in the class and they're being missed.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the next part of my story goes, where you go into the third level, but we won't go there.
We'll go there in a second, but I want to talk to you, that wonderful teacher, Finbar O'Driscoll. Good morning, Finbar. Nice to have you on the show this morning.
Good morning, Ryan. Thank you for having me on.
Do you recall John as a child, I wonder? Can you tell me about that?
Oh, I do indeed, yeah. I remember it was my first class. I had 31 pupils in the class, and the other teachers used to slag me because I had the smallest class in the school. But maybe what people didn't realise was within the 31, there was a group of 6, we'll say, that would have struggled particularly with reading and maybe some with maths as well. And I was kind of full of the joys and ready for, you know, my teaching career. And I wanted to progress things right from the beginning. So I used to use a lot of testing, you know, weekly, be it spelling, tables, whatever. Then the Drumcondra test then became kind of part of the scene by the time they were in sixth class. So I suddenly began to realize that there was a huge gap, and that between the top end of the class and the lower end. And there was no point in kind of getting some of the weaker pupils. I know, as John has just pointed out there, some of them would have been embarrassed, but in the early days, it was kind of common to, during reading, to get the pupils to read. But I found out very quickly those for whom this was a major issue. So they were, I grouped them and kind of worked with that group specifically to try and give them extra help, as it were.
And that was the equivalent of a life raft for you, because this essentially changed your life.
Yeah.
Maybe saved your life.
Well, I'd say if Finbar didn't take that on, I wouldn't be able to read or write today. There's no doubt about that. And the other five that he did the same, and that was only one class. How many classes has he taught in his career?
Yeah.
But just the difference that one teacher can make is phenomenal. Like, I've had loads of teachers, but none of them went beyond what was expected in the daily routine to look after him. And exactly what Finbar's after saying there is exactly what he did. He wanted to just look after every single person in the class. Group the six was outside of the main bunch and worked on us as a separate entity within the classroom.
A lot of some teachers, not a lot, but some teachers feel, you know, my job is from 9 to 4, I'm out, I don't have to do this extracurricular stuff, and I certainly don't need to take a child out of their the shadows because of dyslexia. Finbar, what was it about you as a teacher that felt there was more to it than just, as John pointed out, the state curriculum, that there was a more, if you like to use the modern expression as it is, a holistic approach to teaching?
I don't know, maybe it just kind of came naturally. I didn't kind of set out to do anything differently, but I'm just referring back to what John was saying there. If I realised at the time that he had the motorbike magazines in his bag, they would have been produced. I would have got him to bring those out, even as a way of showing that he was able to work in this area.
Yes,
but I was very honoured to kind of get these accolades, because it doesn't often happen for teachers.
Yes.
Because there are a lot of other teachers out there too, and have been over the years, that, you know, maybe have done similar types of work in their classroom, but haven't received the
credit where it's due.
Whatever that I'm getting.
No. I mean, I always say it on this show, we're fans of and supporters of teachers on this program, because they're the great underestimated members of society in a functioning democracy, because they mould the minds of the next generation.
Yes.
They're on their feet all day, every day. They're taking the home. Anyway, you don't need me to go on about it. And Finbar, what are you up to in your life these days?
Well, I'm retired. I'm retired now. I'm still involved with ladies Gaelic football. I was involved as a referee for a good number of years, and I still do assessing referees or upcoming referees in the ladies Gaelic football end of things. That kind of takes up a lot. It takes up a good bit of time,
sure.
And that's kind of one of the main. You know, do a lot of reading and into sport. Sport is a big pastime of mine, and you know, it doesn't matter what sport it is, football, hurling, soccer. I have an interest.
You're always occupied. Well, Finbar, it's been good to talk to you this morning. Happy Christmas to you and your family, and thank you for your time today.
Not at all, Finbar, thank you.
Nice to talk to you.
Bye
and John Brennan staying with us, because what Finbar did was steered you and your mother towards Ladd Lane in Dublin to see the specialist. And what I found so interesting about your encounter with the specialist was, what age were you at this point?
Seven.
And you're looking at this man, and he gives you a sheet of paper, and he says, read that word. Now, the word you're about to say is, this knocked me out, because it really, for me, as somebody who's not dyslexic, it doesn't, you're trying to get into the mind of somebody who is, this summed it up. So he hands you the sheet. Yeah. There's one word on it. Read this. What was the word?
Bed. And I couldn't get it. And he explained it to me, and he said, listen, it's a B. He said, what's a bed? He said, you have a headboard, you have a flat bit which you lie on, and he says, you have a kicker at the end. He was an American man, they call it a kicker at the end of the bed. And he said, what's that? He said, start with a B, a bed, and so a B, okay? And I couldn't get anything more. And then he explained to me, ed, and then I got the ED, and then it looks like a bed. And that just instantly, like that, I got it. But what he did as well, which you did the minute I came into this studio today, you lowered your seat to be at the same level as I am. You didn't even know you were doing it.
I was wondering, had you spotted, but go on anyway. Yeah. So he did that, did he, with his chair?
No, he had the exact same chair on his side as on this side. And the minute I walked in, I looked at the desk and I said, we're equal. There wasn't. It. He wasn't.
No,
above,
elevated.
And it was just lovely. The exact same thing was what you
did. Isn't that funny? But also, I think very noteworthy is the expression on his face when you struggled. And yes. This is key as well. Yeah. So talk to me about that expression. Yeah. You write very eloquently about that.
No, he spotted it and he knew. And this was his forte. This was his research. This was everything what the man was about. And he instantly saw. And dyslexia back in the late 70s wasn't known at all.
Yeah.
And I thought it was great. It was a lovely exotic name. God, I was delighted. I had something so good going for me. My mother jumped out the door when she heard. But he'd come across it many times before. He knew the tools to play with, to give me. And he there was a school which was started in St. Michael's in Bray for 3 weeks every summer. And I went to that for 3 years, I think. And that made a huge difference because then I was in a group of people that were like-minded as myself. And there was a activities and lessons looking at things differently. And it was all pitched at bed, B-E-D. You look at words differently. And amazing. I would do the exact same. And I think from a dyslexic point of view, I think the brain works quicker.
Yes.
Because you're always compensating and you're always thinking, right, what's coming next?
Yeah.
And you're sitting there with three big sheets of paper in front of you and I'm trying to say, what's on those pieces of paper?
Yeah, you have no idea where I'm going to go next. And exactly. That's what I love because you're smart, but I'm in charge.
No, even if we're at the same level.
Well, as Animal Farm, some animals are more equal than others sometimes. I say this in jest, obviously. And you described the intensity of the dyslexia and yet you write a book as an adult. But you do describe the fact that you had cancer at the time, that you were high as a kite.
And quote, 20 unquote, steroids a day.
20 steroids a day. You got the notion. So how many words?
I always had it in my mind because we come across an awful lot of young people through work in the park and in Drunkwin and the Lansdowne now.
Yeah.
Students, 17, 18 year olds, who are going through a second level education system that really only has one goal at the end to get you to third level.
Yeah.
Like we've done away with FOSS, we've done away with ANCA, we've done away with CERT. So there's no place, natural gravitation for a person to go who isn't academically minded.
Yeah.
And these kids who we've worked with have been pushed into a system which after a year going into third level college, they realise, sorry, it's the wrong course I'm on. This isn't for me. Don't want to do it. They drop out and then their self-worth drops because now they're a failure because they've left college and society doesn't look well on them.
Yeah.
And if you leave school, as I did at 15 and went working on a vegetable truck, nothing wrong with it, best education you can get. I think if you can sell flowers at the top of Grafton Street, it's the best education you can get. And also, what were you looking for yesterday in Bewley's?
Mixed spice bun and a cherry bun.
You can sell them now.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a skill.
Yeah.
And it is a career. And there's fantastic people right around the world who've gone to the very top of various different sectors who left school early and got on with it by learning on the street.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's enough credit given to that in today's world. And that was the other reason for writing the book.
Okay. And people talk about that, the School of Life and the University of Hard Knocks, isn't that it?
Yeah.
Lovely to listen to John, says Fiona. He's an adult version of my little boy. I'm delighted to hear that mammies back then were wearing a path to the school gate as I am now. So I'm looking forward to reading John's book. I think it's important to say, John, your book, to me, it feels like a manual. I think it'd be enormously helpful for not only teachers, but also families with children who are in this world of dyslexia.
It's hope.
And it is hope. I think very much it's a very, like yourself, very positive disposition. And even when you were in your own health difficulties, I don't know how you kept chipper enough, but there is a very honest point in your book where you did talk about going to the Cliffs of Moher and saying, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
What pulled you back from that?
Filming in Clare.
You see, this is what you do. You go humour in the darkness, which I do myself.
Yes.
So I'm not going to.
You're prone to it yourself.
I am very prone to it, John.
No, I'm going up the road, and I was after being diagnosed with cancer, and poor old Gwen was going back to Kenmare.
Yeah.
We were filming in Clare at the time, and I'm driving back, and you think, which way do you go? Okay, because cancer is not a good word. If I've been through it twice, it doesn't bother me anymore. The chemo and all that, thanks be to God, touch wood, I sailed through it both times. Dunmanway Unit in Cork, CUH, looked after me very, very well. It will come back and haunt me again at another stage, but we'll hit it on the head again, please God, at that time. But you fear the worst when you hear the word cancer. Like you say that to anyone and they walk out the door and the tears are flowing down their face. And then your brain goes into overtime. You're in a car, you're driving on your own, you're thinking, right, what's the future? X, Y, or Z. And I went back filming. There's a good story to the end of this. I went back filming to poor Francis was in bits on the set when I came back and told him, Maggie, the director, we didn't tell at all. So my head was fried. I wasn't able to think at all. That was 11 o'clock in the morning on the 16th of March 2011. And at 5 o'clock that afternoon, I get a phone call from an auctioneer in Dublin to say that the bank have accepted our bid on Drumquina Manor in Kenmare. So I rang Gwen and I said, I've good news and I've bad news. And she said, John, there couldn't be good news today. I said, there is. I said, we're after buying Drumquina. So I can't tell you on air what the response was.
Okay.
But that, it's yeah. You just get on with it. Do you know, you spoke to about a person who came in with cerebral palsy this morning, a child, okay? Like, there's things in life that hit you that are a million times worse than what I've been through.
Yeah.
So you can beat yourself up and say, oh, holy God, look at me, God love me, or you can get on with it.
And you put a lot of things in context. Lovely to hear this conversation this morning about John and dyslexia. I have two young children, adult children, who are both dyslexic and without their teacher spotting their issues in primary school at a young age, which has helped them move on with their lives and careers. Oh, they did, sorry. And they both are doing great. Everyone finds their way and with the help of lots of people. So thank you, John, for talking about your life with dyslexia. I just showed my 7-year-old girl that bed trick. Her face lit up with excitement. She's being assessed for dyslexia. It says Paul. Now, that to me sends shivers down my spine because that is the power of a good story like yours on a radio program.
It's just you look at it differently.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's practical. And that's the brain you have. And it's just to champion that as opposed to hitting it on the head. It's not fair for children who are underachievers at school. And there's another thing, actually. Now, every time the Leaving Cert comes out, the news at 9 o'clock champions the ones who get the 9 A's.
Yeah, I know.
Okay?
I know.
And like the other guy is coming out and he's got 360 points and he's done fantastic. Two, three, but he's not championed.
We could do an hour together on the horrors of the Leaving Cert. I'm not a fan. So
I never did it, so that's fine.
I could tell you about it. So you don't get Leaving Cert anxiety dreams, do you?
No, I never suffered that.
Sorry, go on.
Great. No, we did the group cert.
Oh, the group cert. Okay,
and then
very
I did
good.
Half the intro cert, and that was plenty for me.
God, where did it all go wrong, John?
It was great.
John, it's been great to talk to you. Your name is John. The book is called My Name is John, an atypical story of success. And I think people really get a kick out of it. I loved it because it's terribly entertaining, but utterly instructive. Good on you. And thank you for being
here
today.
Thank you very much.
John, and to you and Gwen and the kids, happy Christmas. Thank and Francis, of course, and all the gang in Kenmare. Wish you well. Drive safely, won't you?
I'll be blown back.
You sure will. Okay, 5 to 10.